Abdullah.
My name is Nahid Zubairi, and I have a question regarding our initial concern whether we should be doing this in Urdu or English. I have been brought up in Canada.
Come and help me.
And I would have to honestly say that I know English more than I do Urdu. And I understand, again, like this is a question as well as a suggestion. I do understand that in a situation like this, English is probably more, like would be the better decision to choose to do this, to do our meeting in. But when we're at a meeting, a monthly meeting, or like I'm in Young Lajna. So in our Young Lajna meetings, we've also been told that our meetings should always be held in English. My suggestion or my question would be, I feel that this is the only place other than at home where I can use or learn how to speak Urdu. And why would it not be of more, would it be better for us not to perform speeches in both English and Urdu? And I know the question always comes up that time...
First, let me answer this question first, please. Huh? Right? Have you understood me?
Yes.
Oh, there has been a very unfortunate custom with Pakistanis, a habit, sort of, to immediately revert to their own language whenever they are present in group, and they do not pay regard to the presence of those in whose country they are sitting or functioning as their citizens. And they know sometimes that such people belonging to that country are present in the conference or meeting, and they cannot understand Urdu. So they do not pay any regard to this. This is extremely discourteous. And again, Hazrat Muslim Maud, the second head of the Ahmadiyya community, long ago started instructing Ahmadi missionaries to start using the language of the country, because they are the people to whom the message is to be delivered. They are the people who have to be trained by Ahmadis, who are born in Ahmadiyya or have an advantage in their upbringing over the newcomers. So if their language is not promoted, then they will start distancing themselves from Ahmadiyya. And this is born out of a long bitter experience in Europe. When I came to England, I noticed at that time there were very few English people who were steady comers to the mission and who remained in serious touch with the mission. Occasional coming, you know, for the sake of tamasha, seeing this and that, that was different. So I investigated the matter and I found that if all the Ahmadis who had become Ahmadis in England remained Ahmadis and remained in touch, and their progeny also had done the same, then the number would run into thousands by this time. And yet it was just a few. My further investigation revealed that it was the mistake of the Pakistanis or Indians, because when a new convert came to attend the mosque, he was practically alienated. He thought he is a foreigner in the presence of these people. And it was extremely discourteous and unkind, because having become a Muslim in a society which is so permissive and so open and free, permits you to do whatever you may please, they themselves were almost boycotted. You know, it is not just in Pakistan and India that social pressures are brought about upon those who change their faith, but in a very subtle way, it is also done in European countries. And they bring about the pressure by considering him to be something, you know, out of mind, something who has gone astray, no longer belonging to them, and his social contact comes to a sudden halt. He no longer dances, no longer drinks, no longer eats with them in the same style. The result is that he becomes an outcast of the society. And the society for which he has become outcast practically treats him as an outcast. The reaction is very strong. Sometimes it is not expressed so violently, but something within them dies out gradually, withers away. And they cease coming to the mosque with any enthusiasm. That was the reason. So I put my foot down, I said, no more Urdu in your formal conferences. It took me a long struggle to have this order implemented. Because by habit, willy-nilly people would start falling back to the old habits. The result was that gradually, ever since, all those who have got converted, I have started forming strong communities. We have hundreds of Ahmadi Muslims in Britain, not Pakistani origin or Indian origin, but either British or other nationality, mostly British, and they have come to stay. They have started upbringing their own children in the same style. And the families have got now a permanent feature of Ahmadiyya. So the benefits of this instruction are far more than the possible cons. The pros dominate. Now as far as Urdu is concerned, I do not mean that Urdu should be forgotten or neglected. If somebody thinks this is the instruction, he has completely failed to understand me. What I say is, in formal meetings, in official functions, it is the right of the people of the country that their language must be the official medium. And that would be so. In your homes, you must teach your children Urdu. If they have an Urdu background, they must teach their children Pashto, if they have a Pashto background. They must teach their children Sindhi, if they have a Sindhi background. Because the languages are custodians of cultures. And the cultural pulls here against Islam, Islamic way of life, are so strong that and so disguised that you do not know that they will ultimately pull you away from faith. And you permit your children to be carried away. And because they do not know their own mother tongue, which is mostly Urdu, the result is that they don't know their background, they don't know the same literature. Not only there is a lack of their understanding of their cultural background, but also a generation gap is created, which is extremely detrimental for a progressive cause. Many generation gaps have occurred in Europe and in the Western world in general, but they don't care. Each generation gap created a new style and introduced a new style in culture and loss of values. So if you study the last 200-300 years of European and Western history, you will come to notice that generation after generation, they step down in moral behavior because there appeared to be gaps between older generation and new generation and nobody cared. But in a progressive community who has a message to deliver to the world, who has a future to look up to, generation gap will work as poison. If your children do not feel belonging to you, then they belong to the surrounding atmosphere, which is very toxic. Then you begin to notice in their eyes an attitude of alienation. They're your children, but you know, you feel in your heart that I have handed my children over to some other people. They no longer are mine entirely. So the parents get extremely panicky. I receive panicky messages for prayer sometimes during my contacts with the families. Some mothers cry that something is happening to our children. But they do not know that that had happened to them first. They did not care for these things. They did not plan in time. Not only should the language be guarded and taught to the younger generation, but also something of the past experiences should be shared. You know, when we were children, we used to read certain books, small children's story books. Now, they were storybooks, but they played a great role in cementing our ties with the older generation, which had gone through the same books or the same stories or the same style of teaching. And it also created a bondage between us and our younger generation, because we shared the same values, a small reference to anything, and everybody would laugh or know what is happening. So there was a sense of belonging and continuation of a thread which bonded us together. It's no longer so. They are English speaking, and when they grow up, they know their parents don't speak English so well. And they gain a false complex of superiority too. Now, it only happens, there is no complex of superiority as such. The only complex is that of inferiority. But this concept, which I say, false concept of complex of superiority, is in fact a polarized effect of inferiority complex in their parents. When they know that their children speak much better English, when they know that in education they are much advanced and they are more smartly dressed and behave as if they belong to the world and the older generation does not, it is their inferiority complex which induces a sort of superiority complex in the children. If the parents do not suffer from any complex, the children will never suffer from any complex. I have seen parents with almost no knowledge, illiterate, but they are upright and confident, and they know that they are noble people, and their children always respect them, however big they become. Look at Sadzafullah Khan. He was a chairman or what, president of the United Nations. He was the chairman of the International Court of Justice. But even the memory of his late mother brought respect to him. He almost was transformed with that mention. And she was almost an unlettered lady. So that is what I mean. That is why I say false complex. That complex is in fact transmitted by a way of reflection or conduction system. Then the children begin to grow and feel superior because they know their parents are afraid of them. Their parents know they are lesser than them. So this feeling is transferred and then they are destroyed. So there is so much to it. It's not just a question of a newcomer wanting to learn Urdu. There is, it's a grave, complex problem. So I insist that language, as I've said, would be spoken in formal language conferences, and also when anyone else is present who does not know your language, you must pay respect to him and speak his language. But at home, there is another end to look at. And there you must teach Urdu or whatever language you belong to, and also introduce literature in that language, teach them to read and write and to be competent and proficient in that language. And also, of course, they would learn English automatically. Nobody can stop that. Now, as for the newcomers, I believe that classes should be arranged by Jamaat, and not only at center level, it's difficult for all the people to come all the way to the center for such classes, but there are many Ahmadi ladies who have no occupation, many Ahmadi men who have no occupation and who can offer their services for you know, the voluntary classes of Urdu, etc. And maybe some of them can open even professional schools of languages where they can teach oriental languages, and many others may become interested. But the new Ahmadis should also be taught Urdu, and non-Urdu speaking people should also be taught Urdu out of respect for religious literature in Urdu. Urdu is becoming very rich, very fast in religious literature. And Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam had written so much by way of the commentary of the Holy Quran, by way of explanations of Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's sayings and traditions, and by way of resolving many problems which have been agitating the minds of centuries of Muslims, but they fail to understand them. So that is a very rich literature, and high-class literature defies translation. That is why no perfect translation of the Quran can ever be conceived. That is why so many translations are needed, that some have done justice to this part, some to the other part, and so on. Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam's books also require very special attention. But the ideal thing is for someone to learn Urdu and to enjoy it in Urdu. But the books of Masih Maud alayhi salam stand to a very higher order. Even poetry can't be translated. Even ordinary poetry cannot be correctly translated. Once I read a translation of Ghalib done by some professors of Urdu in University of London. They are very respect them, their knowledge. They came and dined with me as well. But translation in some portions was horrifying. I did not certainly love that Ghalib which I read in English. Well, Ghalib was my favorite poet. So if that is done to an ordinary poet, you can understand that Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi wasalam cannot be correctly introduced to an English-speaking person if he only knows him through translation. The distortions of the minds of the translator, his inability to do justice to it, would be transferred in the name of Masih Maud alayhi wasalam in his through his translation. And that is exactly what once happened when I was a student in England in 1955-57, an Englishman, an Ahmadi, came to me and said that I want to discuss something. I have seen some passages translated from Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salam in review, and the translation is so cheap and so lowly in character that it appears to be that some cheap seller of goods is trying to sell his commodity, and no respectable person will be interested in such things. He said, because I know Masih Maud, I love him, so it has not done me any damage. But there are others who do not know him. Would you like him to be known through such translations? And the passages he showed me, brought perspiration to me. Really disgraceful. So incidentally, I advise you not to take the translation work of Masih Maud alayhi salam lightly. It is a job of people who know both English and Urdu very well, who know the religious jargon, who know the art of translation, and very few people can do that. But with slightly less we can cope, but not with distortions, please. So these are my general observations regarding the question of languages. So I believe that the new Ahmadis from all over the world should also be taught Urdu. Yet the first previous instruction would stand solid and good. Don't change it because of this. Thank you.
Thank you for your response. I just want to know if it would be fair for me to say that if I was at a Young Lajna meeting and all of us spoke or understood Urdu, that we would be able to conduct that meeting.
No, I still would not like you to take chances. So because sometimes you ignore that. I want this to be a habit in Lajna, that you should speak English as an official language. This is the country where you live in. This will give you more practice. You have to also to convey Ahmadiyya to others. If you are shy of speaking in Urdu, discussing any religious subject in Urdu in your private meetings, how would you be able to deliver the message to others? So that will give you a good exercise, if nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you.